CliffCentral.com.
All right, very nice. Goose. There we go. To wake you up this morning, it is 8 minutes after 7, CliffCentral.com. It's time for us to check in on the latest news to give us all the important stories, all the things that we need to know this morning. Here is Mabale Maloy. Pretty.
So peaceful.
Isn't that nice, huh? That's lovely.
Gentle start.
Yes.
But now we fight!
Oh. No.
Yes.
But now we fight.
Now we
you
fight.
Knew.
At yes. least in court, Gareth, a fight is about to go down because lobby group Outer, this is the organization undoing tax abuse.
I love these guys.
They have applied for an urgent court application to stop the implementation of an electricity tariff increase. Because come Friday, you, me, and the pimp who runs his illegal business from his office in Hillbrow are expected to pay 9.4% more for our electricity.
Ooh.
So our town are like, no, we are not happy with this. To court we go.
Ooh.
Big fight going to go down. Our town will be heading to the High Court in Pretoria tomorrow. The tariff increase is expected to be implemented on Friday, so it's, you know, it's crunch time. So they're going to try and stop the increase from going ahead. It's a 9.4% increase, and they're saying that actually us as consumers shouldn't be expected to pay more than 3.3%, which is
right.
the number that they want. Now, Eskom initially wanted us to pay an extra 16.6%. Then they went to the energy regulator and they're like, we need all this money. The energy regulator said, no, you can't make them pay 16.6%. Mm-hmm. There was a whole lot of back and forth between them and Eskom. They settled on 9.4%, but Outer saying, no, you cannot make the people pay that much. We want 3%.
Jeez.
Oh.
Either way,
we're going to be paying more for electricity.
Yeah.
Now, I remember, shortly after moving in, Michael Flex, probably the number one thing that he was complaining about the most from moving in with his girlfriend is how much he's paying for electricity. And I'm afraid things are only going to get worse for you and me and everyone else, Flex.
I am going to have to get to a point where I'm buying hundreds of hamsters spinning wheels to generate
That's
energy.
That's a good idea.
Because this is ridiculous. You know how much I already spend on electricity? Now I'm going... Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh.
You do mean to laugh. You're like that. You mean like that.
No, the only reason... You know me. If you don't laugh, then you will kill yourself. This is what I say all the time. I'm laughing because I know what Flex is complaining about. And I'm just thinking to myself, an extra 9.4%. Because where's that money going to come from?
Yeah.
And this is happening on Friday. So.
Gee, thanks, Eskom. There's another bunch of people who are like vultures swirling around us, waiting for us to just completely run out of money.
Next time I'm driving on Louis Botha and I see someone illegally connected to electricity boxes of street lamps, I'm not phoning, reporting nothing.
Yeah!
Don't. But, you know what? We should all be stealing electricity. There are a lot of people in this country who don't pay for their electricity at all.
Yeah.
You know, the illegal connections and so on.
Yeah.
I don't see why the rest of us should be punished. You know, just like e-tolls.
Oh, those.
Which, by the way, I saw a thing on TV the other day. They, the spokesperson for Eskom, I think it's Vusimona, mm-hmm. who's notoriously good at just being a spin doctor for whoever will pay, was saying, oh, well, you have three options. I don't even remember what all three are, but he said as a Gauteng road user, you have three options. Number one, you pay upon the date that we send a summons to you.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, you take us to court and we'll see who wins. And you know they'll put a whole lot of money into this.
Yeah.
And trust me, lawyers are expensive. And the third one is I think they'll just lock you up or something. I can't even remember what the third one is. But basically, I'm putting my middle finger up loud and proud for everyone to hear. Sanrel can Kushmir and Tochas. I do not care about you guys, and I'm not interested in your bills. And I only received the first and only time I got a bill was 3 months into e-tolling. And I tore it up and I burnt it in a fire. and I have not paid any attention since. And you know what? I haven't got a single bill since then.
Oh, so the whole tearing up and fire thing.
It was a ritual.
Yeah, it worked. Yeah.
It was a ritual.
It was like casting some kind of protection spell.
Correct. I'm not afraid. I learned that from the Red Indians in North America. Did you not know that?
No, Gareth. Yes. You are full of surprises.
Exactly. Many surprises that I have. I did a chant around my fire. And I burnt that e-toll bill. So the problem with Eskom is you can't just burn their bill and ignore them because they'll switch you off.
Yes, it's not as simple.
And I don't want to reconnect it myself. I could electrocute myself. I'm not a professional.
There are a lot of people who have suffered serious injuries and some who have died doing that illegal connection thing. It's very dangerous if you don't know what you're doing.
Apparently 8 or 9 people a day in this country die from doing illegal connections.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. They just fry them like a. Okay. They actually make them crispy.
Okay.
They get all crispy on the lines. Because they try to connect these things illegally and sometimes they don't know what they're doing. And it fries them. And then they take their crispy remains and they put them in a box and they give them to their families.
Speak your mind.
It's got to be a horrible way to die, right?
Yeah.
That's got to be a horrible way to die.
That and the lightning thing.
Yesterday, you got to listen to The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg and Kate Pater yesterday. You'll hear all about electricity in the sky, lightning, and how it can kill you. And how many people die? You have no idea how many people in this country die every day from lightning strikes. You find out on that show. What an amazing show. Let me just give credit to Gary Hertzberg and his team. They put together a classy show every week. I did not know any of these things about lightning. Where you should go when there's a thunderstorm.
It's important things to know.
Listen, Kate said afterwards, when there's rain, she's just running inside. She's not even taking a chance anymore. Because the horrible stories that you heard on this show yesterday will put the fear of God in you. You'll think Zeus is still hurling lightning bolts at people, like in ancient Greece. You've got to listen to The Laws of Life. Luckily for you, as with all of our shows here on cliffcentral.com, it's available as a podcast. Download it now. You can do it while you're on the app listening to us. Download it and listen to it later.
Don't they say if you're in like a field and lightning starts striking, you should dig a hole and try get as low to the ground and in this hole as possible?
Look, I can't remember what they were advising yesterday because I was in and out of meetings, but you've got to listen to this.
Isn't this like a general knowledge thing?
No. Apparently, a lot of the things that we think are general knowledge are actually completely stupid, and we shouldn't be doing them. So just listen to the show yesterday. Yeah. They had all the experts on. They had a doctor, a guy who can tell you what to do if someone is struck by lightning. There was one story about this lightning bolt that struck, and there were 11 people, and they all just dropped dead. Dead. You have to listen to this show. There we go.
Okay, let's just reflect on a story that basically had the entire world gripped, watching as if it was some kind of massive blockbuster movie that was unfolding before our very eyes.
Mm-hmm.
That Egyptian man who hijacked a plane and then...
Can someone explain this to me? I don't know what the hell's going on with this story, please.
All right, so this guy,
yeah,
he is 58 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, let me just double check that fact. Okay, yes, he is. He hijacked an Egypt Air passenger plane and forced it to divert to Cyprus because he was demanding to see his ex-wife, Gareth. And it sparked a dramatic airport standoff that ended peacefully after 6 hours. And this was because he eventually handed himself over to the authorities. The hijacker has been described as unstable. And he claimed to have explosives strapped to his waist. But after, you know, all the passengers on board eventually were safely off the airplane and he handed himself over, it was discovered that they weren't actually explosives. It was just a bunch of telephone wires that he'd strapped around himself to make it look like he was packing heat.
Well, what about the dude who had a selfie taken with the supposed terrorist?
What?
You didn't see that?
No.
Yeah, Flax, you gave me a picture this morning.
It went viral yesterday. Mm. Some dude decided he's going to take a photo with the alleged bomber, and he smiled like ear to ear. He probably knew in the 20th century 2016, nobody's going to be able to actually get a bomb on a plane. Like, you know how hard that is? It's
so he had,
impossible.
So, Mubs, he had a bunch of telephone wires.
He stuffed a bunch of telephone wires in on this belt, Gareth, and then he walked onto this plane and he said, look at me, I have a bomb. And
oh, what an idiot.
He said, divert the plane to Cyprus because it was supposed to go to Egypt.
So what did he want to do? Get to Cyprus?
He wanted to talk to his ex-wife.
Oh, my God. You see, again, you've often said this. Don't make your problems other people's problems. You're not allowed to do that.
You're not allowed to do that.
You've got phone, email, Skype, social media. The communication is not the barrier in life anymore.
But now, have you guys seen how basically the entire internet has been making jokes about the situation?
Like what?
And I'm just like, but you guys, isn't it a bit too soon? So someone tweets, the one who kidnapped the plane was trying to deliver a message to his wife. Damn, now if the internet service was good here, he would send it by messenger or WhatsApp. This is the result of bad servers. So people are just like having the greatest of times.
But does this guy not realize? I mean, he's going to go to jail for the rest of his life. You can't joke around with this. You know, you can't even joke. In the U.S. airports, when I was there 2 weeks ago, I flew from Austin to Houston, all in Texas. So you're not leaving the great state of Texas. I had to take my shoes off. I had to take my belt off. It's a pain in the backside. And the one thing you know for sure is it's the one place you do not joke about anything. There is no sense of humor in an airport. None. You do what you're told. You queue up, you don't complain, you look happy, and you get through the system. There is just no room for you to screw around.
In our airport here, you can get arrested just for saying the word bomb in the airport.
You know what? Good. I don't want any of this nonsense while we're flying. It's hard enough to fly. It is a pain in the backside to fly anywhere anymore, taking your shoes off and your belt off every time you go through a gate. They had to do the same thing in Dubai. Unnecessary. And all of this is thanks to a bunch of terrorists. So this guy must be, he must be hunted down. I mean, obviously they've got him, but they must now prosecute him to the full extent of the law. Because this kind of person makes travel for everyone else difficult. All we want to do is travel or visit our friends or do what we need to do. And sometimes we need to fly planes. It's become a nightmare, right?
I mean, I don't think this man understands what he caused yesterday. Shame. Because you reach out to the control towers, you threaten them, you get them to divert an entire plane to land where it's not supposed to. That is not some easy peasy small feat that you do on a daily basis. Then you get like tons and tons of police officials being called out onto the tarmac now, and you know, you've got people on board who are scared out of their mind.
I'm warning you.
They're wondering, am I going to die on this horrible plane? Am I going to die? I don't think this man realizes
I don't
the commotion
think he knows.
He caused.
And you know what? You can't do this because you and your wife had an argument. You just can't. Who told this guy that his feelings matter that much?
I don't know who told him, but he certainly decided that his feelings were more important than anything else yesterday, and so he went ahead and did this. 58-year-old Saif al-Din Mohammed Mustafa. He demanded that a letter be delivered to his Cypriot ex-wife. She was called and brought to the airport to speak to this guy.
There is a service for that. It's called mail. You can pay a bit extra. They'll track it for you. Like,
I don't know how this works. I really don't know how this works. Makes no sense at all.
The president of Cyprus was asked to comment about this entire story, and he apparently laughed and said, always there is a woman. I mean...
Yeah, well...
No, it's not it's not the woman's fault. This guy's a nutcase.
The president of Cyprus blames a woman?
He laughed. What? He laughed when he was asked to comment on this whole situation. And he said,
but what a nutcase.
Always there is a woman.
Listen, there are people who must have feared for their lives.
There were 55 passengers on board that plane.
And they must all sue this man, even if he's worth nothing. They must sue him. And have him pay for their children to go to school and everything else they need for the next 10 years. I would be so furious. You're on a plane out of Cairo, and you've got to go somewhere. And this guy, because he's having issues with his wife, has the plane diverted to Cyprus and threatens to blow everybody up with telephone wires. I would punch his lights out. I'd be so furious.
You certainly wouldn't take a selfie with him like that
no.
one man did.
No. By the way, Roman says on WeChat, if you want to get really burnt, listen to the Renegade Report. We need all the exposure we can get. Well, take a listen to that. That's a very, very controversial show. It's like the antidote to Andrew and Rory.
Sure.
Make sure you listen to the Renegade Report. You can find it on cliffcentral.com. They talk about how the only way to make a country work is by letting libertarians run it. In other words, people who believe in less government. Everything government touches turns to?
Shite.
Yeah.
Government just want more government.
So, it doesn't matter whether you're left-leaning or right-leaning, some people are libertarians across the board, which means they want less government in their lives, they want less government in public services and the rest of it. People should look after themselves. I think that's what Mubs and Ben both agree with.
Totally. Please, could that happen?
No. Could it happen soon? If you want to listen to that and hear all about libertarianism, listen to the Renegade Report on cliffcentral.com. Apparently, Soweto owes a couple of billion rand to Eskom, but it's an election year, so no one gets punished. A couple of billion rand owed in electricity by the municipality of Soweto to the government. You know, so what happens? All of us who pay our bills, we get nailed. Did I tell you about the Ben Affleck video? Let me tell you about this. This is hysterical.
What?
There's an interview, you know, Batman versus Superman is all the rage at the moment. It's all anyone's talking about. And there's an interview with Ben Affleck and Henry Cavill, Superman and Batman, right?
Mm-hmm.
And during the video, this press guy from one of the press outlets asks him, what do you guys think of all the bad press that you're getting for this movie, because the reviews have been scathing.
The reviews for the film have come out, and I don't know if you've had a chance to have a look at them or, like, your response to those.
And Ben is just sitting there, and Henry Cavill's sitting there, and Henry looks like he's interested, and he's going to answer the question.
Okay.
Ben looks like he's in another universe. He's zoning out before the question's even been asked, because he knows what's coming, right? He hates these reviews. It really hurts his feelings.
No, what are they saying?
Well, it's been getting a mixed response.
Meanwhile, Superman versus Batman will make you hate them. It's a Dawn of Justice Dawn disappointment. Why is it so terrible? Rotten Tomatoes, 31%. Just horrible reviews.
I just wondered whether that how that makes you guys feel and whether it will even affect the film as such.
Well, the interesting thing is that...
Hello, darkness.
So Henry's answering the question, and now hello, darkness, my old friend, comes. They zoom in on Ben. You've never seen such a miserable-looking human being.
Oh, I've come to talk with you again.
He looks like he wants to slit his wrists.
Because a vision softly creeping.
Like he wants to jump in front of a bus.
Left its seeds while I was sleeping.
He looks like he's about to cry.
And the vision that was planted.
And poor old Henry's answering the question in the background, but they've muted him.
Still remains.
And then they come back.
Within the sound of silence.
Partly have spoken.
Ben? I agree.
That's all he says. I agree. Can you believe that?
Oh, no.
Isn't that interesting?
Oh.
Horrible, right?
Shame.
Yeah. It's quite something.
But the movie is doing well at the box office, apparently. I mean, I know the critics have been very harsh of it. But it seems like the fans are still prepared to put their money into it.
Someone has broken it down and analyzed this video to the second. 004. The interviewer utters the phrase bad reviews. Ben's eyelids start fluttering erratically as if blinking away the emotion he only allows when he's alone in the dead of night. 008. Ben says, I haven't read them, but is immediately drowned out by the louder, more confident Cavill. Ben is used to this. This has happened all his life. He looks to the ground. 024. Ben forces a smile. You know what? Things are really okay, he thinks to himself. You've got a really good jaw. Everyone has gotten over in the nanny thing. Ellen DeGeneres, the patron saint of all controversial celebrities, has given me her tick of approval. Everything's going to be okay. 028. Ben's face falls when the interviewer asks whether the film's unpopularity will affect how it performs at the box office. Ben doesn't know. He's used to being unpopular. He's been there before. 030. Ben starts to descend into melancholy. How did I get here? He wonders. He starts to think about Jennifer Garner telling everyone how he casts a shadow on women. Or something. If only she knew the truth. He is but a shadow. 037. Wow. Cavill's still talking. 040. Quick. Nod. So it sounds like you're listening to Henry. Instead of taking stock of every life decision you've ever made leading up to this moment. 042. Remember the happy days. With Matt Damon. 050. Come on. It isn't that bad, is it? I wonder if they'll let me play a third superhero. I wonder if it'll be... I could be Spider-Man's uncle or something. 055. I wonder what Matt's doing. 1 minute. Okay. Cavill's still talking. 102. Maybe I should have gotten naked in this one, too. 104. I'm but a shell of an Affleck. What a guy. I mean, this poor dude. And you know, they have said horrible things. I don't know if you've noticed, but Jennifer Garner's been saying terrible things about him.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I thought the two of them were trying to make it work for
nah.
the children and that whole thing.
Apparently he's banging the maid.
Again.
He's pulling
it's a
an
disaster. Army. It's a disaster. Poor Ben Affleck. He looks so sad in this video. You have to see it to believe it. Jeff says, it took Sanrel 2 years to send me my first invoice, which was incorrect and missing days. So he's not going to be paying them anytime soon. Julian says, I will never pay Sanrel. They can whatever you said too, Garrett. Then apparently people are saying the movie isn't that bad. Critics with opinions... Critics are morons with opinions. It's about 6 out of 10. Ben will probably say a 3 out of 10, but we know he has no taste. And I think he means you, Ben, not Ben Affleck. You haven't seen it yet?
No, I have no real intentions. But the thing is, with a superhero movie like that, you go in with superhero expectations. You want action and you want comic stuff. So yeah, the critics, of course, are going to hate it.
But I wonder if superhero movies are going to be different after... What was that one that everyone raved about?
Deadpool. Great movie.
Deadpool,
amazing
huh?
movie.
Yeah. That's worth having a look at.
So if you tell me I've got no taste, then I don't want taste, if that's the problem.
Don't forget, we got Offshore Money coming up in a short while. What? You know what that is, right?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, but
you
always say this interesting
the
things
country.
About it.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to get your money into a place where it can't be affected by the shitty rand or by... insecure international markets and the rest of it, you need to listen to Offshore Money. They will tell you how to look after, protect, and add to your wealth by keeping it in all the right places and which rules you have to follow, which things you have to make sure you've done so that your money is safe and secure. That's coming up in about 15 minutes' time. What else do you have for us, Mubs?
Gareth, there is a group of 17 political activists who are known as the Luanda Book Club, who have now been sentenced to jail after being convicted of plotting to overthrow Angola's government.
Oh.
The group was arrested at a 2015 meeting. This was at a book club meeting where they were arrested. They had met to discuss Gene Sharp's 1993 book, From Dictatorship to Democracy, A Conceptual Framework for Liberation.
Shame. You know, this really upsets me. I mean, that DeSantos guy has been, I think it's DeSantos, I can't remember his name. He's been in charge of Angola for 30 years or more.
Mm.
Bunch of people get together and they've got a book club. They want to discuss a book.
They want to discuss a group. A
I
book.
Mean, you would think that smart people in a country with a conscience would want to be discussing a change. It's the one thing that you should definitely be doing, unless your whole nation is full of complete morons who are wandering around like zombies. Whatever happens to them just happens. They have no control over their own destiny. You would think a book club is the right place for people to start throwing around ideas about what's next. This guy's not going to live forever, this dictator.
I mean, he's already been in power for 36 years.
What's his name?
Eduardo dos Santos.
That's him, yeah.
Jose Eduardo dos Santos.
Yeah, him, goddamn dos Santos.
But, you know...
Yeah, Genie D's uncle, isn't he?
Distant uncle from, like, the mother's side of the family. But state prosecutors decided that, no, these 17, because they are also political activists, were actually planning a coup. And so the activists have been handed jail terms ranging from 2 years and 3 months to 8.5 years.
Eduardo dos Santos has been president of Angola since 1979. He's 1 year longer in office than Bob Mugabe. Just think about that.
Wow.
How can that happen? Who gave him the feudal right to rule over Angola? Because that's what he's exercising. And now a bunch of people reading books get arrested. The world is upside down, Mubs.
Completely.
I'm so glad I don't live in Angola. I just want to say that I want nothing from Angola, and I never want to go there.
Well, from stupidity from people, from to stupidity from artificial intelligence. You know, like, it's a big buzzword. Everyone talks about the fact that robots can do so many cool things.
Yeah.
Well, Microsoft have been trying to do various things in this whole tech space to show that they still have it. Mm-hmm. They're still, you know, the leaders of certain things. So they created an artificial intelligent bot for Twitter that'll be able to converse and chat to people all by itself.
Uh-oh.
So you literally just let it go. Now, when things happen on Twitter that involves conversing with people, everything, it always fails, right?
Uh-huh.
How many of those stupid campaigns are like, ask so-and-so, go badly, within like a minute? So, surprise, surprise, this has gone terribly.
What's happened?
Right, so how this works is this artificial intelligent bot basically interacts with people and therefore talks on what it learns from Twitter. So, starts off all good and well, you know, first tweet, hello world, yay. Then Hitler did nothing wrong.
Uh-oh. Well, straight away?
Wait a minute.
Straight to Hitler?
Wait a minute.
So everyone's obviously baiting this poor thing, right? So it starts off, hello world, yay, I like flowers, whatever. And then people just start interacting with it. So before you know it...
Because people poison the thing.
Yes. So then it's Hitler did nothing wrong, which then basically then responds... Stuff like this was coming out. It was responding to, derp, you know me, Mexican. And then the tweets that basically forced Microsoft to then take it down was, fuck my robot pussy daddy, I'm such a naughty robot.
Oh, no.
You knew that would happen, though, right? You knew humans would come in and screw up everything.
Exactly. But this is what happens when you leave something in Twitter and it starts molding words from what's happening out there in the sick abyss of social media.
And Twitter, of all places, can really be like the darkest of alleys, just a straight dump.
Completely. So Microsoft would have known this, but I mean, it's either a PR exercise that kind of has gone badly and they were expecting it, because no one can be this naive to think that you can let Twitter... That's like having a small child and saying, you know what, you can go in that little playground full of pedophiles. What can really go wrong?
Oh, man.
Poor robot. I mean, this poor thing, it doesn't even know what's gone on. Apparently, Dos Santos, his daughter is the richest woman in Africa because she's extremely bright and creates values for others.
Okay.
Dos Santos' daughter is the richest woman in Africa.
Okay. Wow.
Oh, that worked out well for them. See what I mean? That's a Roman who sent that to us. I know he hates it when we tease him about his name, but it's a French name and we've got to say it right.
We do have to say it right.
Roman. Right. You could listen to him and Jonathan Witt on the Radio Report. There's lots of good shows, actually. You might want to hear Ben's show from Monday about the cricket. There was some fury and sparks and fire and brimstone.
Yeah, I try to keep that to a minimum. I got a really good interview there with an actual Indian person who knows exactly what he's talking about, though. It's good to get people from other countries.
And Ben is writing, he's writing up a storm at the moment.
So many insights.
All right. What else do we have, Mubs?
Gareth, there is a soon-to-be-published book which asserts that Kim Kardashian and her mother, Kris Jenner, conspired with Vivid Entertainment to release the so-called stolen sex tape.
Oh, surprise, surprise.
That helped make Kim famous.
I wonder if all these dumb Kardashian fans will realize they've been duped and actually feel anything, care about it. I don't think they care. I don't think Kardashian fans give a damn. They know they're being sold a lie. But they just don't, they're too stupid to know the difference. They know it's a lie, but they don't really mind. It's like, I'd prefer to be, as long as you entertain me, I'll sit here eating my chips, and you keep entertaining me, and I don't mind how dumb you treat me.
Yeah, it feels like some kind of escape for them, if they can just watch the lives of
the Kardashians.
You know what? Get over yourself, because you're really, really not pretty.
That's right. Thank you, Tan Mom.
Ian Halperin, author of Kardashian dynasty, the controversial rise of America's royal family.
Oh, yeah.
This author quotes a source in the adult film industry who said that a mutual friend of Kim and Paris Hilton, had advised her that if she wanted to achieve fame, a sex tape would be the way to go. Kim had discussed the idea of producing a tape with her family beforehand, and apparently her and momager Kris Jenner, according to this book, then conspired with Vivid Entertainment to have the tape leaked or whatever, and then it got into the news, and then it was a whole big story, and now we've got the Kardashian dynasty.
Okay, so they've made lots of money. Yep. Hooray. Right? And they're very famous.
Yes.
They've done well. What kind of parent in the world should be allowed to put a sex video of their child out on the internet? What kind of parent would consent to this? What kind of human being thinks this is the right way to behave? I'd take all their success out of it. Is this a moral thing? And I'm the last one to climb on a soapbox and start preaching about morals. It's got nothing to do with me what your morals are. But surely, if you're a mom, the one thing you want to do is protect your child. You've got a daughter. The dad is dead. You're married to a tranny. And you've got this daughter who is desperately looking for attention. The last thing you do is feed the machine. This is going to end in tears, everybody. I hate to say it. But the fact that she and her daughter conspired to sell her soul, which is effectively what's happened here, it cannot end well. It's not going to end well for the Kardashians. It's not going to end well for all their fans. It's just going to go horribly wrong. It really is not a happy situation. And now she's married to Kanye, so there's you pile extra complications on top of this because you've got this little boy who's still desperately looking for mommy's love and daddy's love, Kanye. And now they've got a kid. They've brought some innocent child into the world who's just another role in the soap opera.
They've got two.
Two more kids. I knew she was smuggling two in that big ass of hers. Knew it.
But you know what? It is a good question that you ask, because if the story is true, I don't know how?
What kind of parent does
how
this?
How do you do that?
If your mom did this to you,
I mean,
you're an idiot. She's clearly got a very low IQ, this Kim. She's not a smart girl, right? She really isn't. I've met her. I interviewed her. She's as thick as pig shit. So she sits there, and she says to her mom, I'm going to be famous or something. And her mom goes, well, we could always put out a sex tape. And nobody stops them and says, guys, this is wrong.
But don't you think it's quite an interesting discussion that she's either the best mom in the world or the worst?
I mean,
because
did Kris watch the sex tape with her and go, this is perfect?
She was probably in the room
Your
directing
pussy
it.
Your looks so good.
Yeah, because I mean...
What did she do? How did this work?
But at the same time, okay, that, or does she make $100 a day on a pole somewhere near an airport? Because if she is really stupid, which, I mean, look, this whole family is made for just this, perhaps.
Hmm.
Yeah, because, you know, you have a lot of people who defend the Kardashians and say, you know, hate them as much as you want, but you can't deny they're business savvy. And they always talk about how Kris Jenner has managed to turn every single one of her kids into celebrities and superstars. And they are. But now, at what cost?
Vagina pussy.
If the story is true, at what cost did you turn every single one of your children into superstars?
Mm.
Okay, well, ask yourself the question. Where you are right now, say, for instance, 10 years ago, your mother said to you, right, you're going to leak a sex tape and you'll get $100 million. What would you have said to your mother?
I would have cried.
Just cried, but I mean, you would have had $100 million, essentially. Your life would be significantly different.
Yeah.
A lot of parents go up to kids and say, you need to get a job because I'm fat and useless. That's a slightly different kind of offering, don't you think?
I find the whole thing very... It's really deeply disturbing. I mean, it's nothing to me. I don't have a dog in this fight. I don't care about the Kardashians. I don't watch them. It doesn't affect my life. I'm not genuinely, personally upset by any of this stuff. But I do wonder about the kind of society that we regard as superior, the kind of behavior that we regard as celebrity behavior. the sorts of people that young girls might be looking up to. And I really, I'm never going to be the moral exemplar. I'm never going to say to you, that's right or that's wrong. It's none of my business. But I do think that if a mother sees her child as a profit center and is prepared to release with the child, even though this is an adult girl, prepared to release a deeply personal, gratuitous sex tape. And remember, all of this was set up. It was already, the blueprint was Paris Hilton. Nobody cared about Paris Hilton before that sex tape came out. And nobody cares about her now. Nobody cares about Paris Hilton. When last did anyone talk about her?
I don't know.
They don't care. She's probably drunk somewhere on a street corner. I doubt very much anyone cares about Paris Hilton anymore. Flax, when last did you read about her?
When she decided she now wants to be a DJ, and that was it, one time.
It was like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
That's what Kim can look forward to. I mean, they can keep the publicity machine going for only so long, until we realize there's no real talent there.
Seacrest will find something, some other vessel.
And Seacrest's the one who's making the real cash, right? Mm. You think the Kardashians are making money. They're making nothing compared to what Seacrest's doing.
It'd be quite interesting having an interview with Seacrest. It'll never happen because he is plastic. But having, like, a bottle of bourbon, that guy, and his real thoughts, the Kardashian.
Yeah. Oh, I'd like
that. Can you imagine the stories?
I'd like that. Because, you know, he's completely manipulating the scenario. Yeah. And, of course, Kris Jenner's smart, too. Let's not take it away from her. But you have to sell an intimate piece of you,
you reckon,
to be willing to have that kind of fame.
You reckon he's stripping Kris Jenner on the side? Just for shits and giggles?
Someone should be. I mean, she hasn't had any from Bruce Jenner in years. Oi, what a mess. And by the way, have you ever seen that show Transparent?
No. Oh, yes, yes.
Wow.
Yes.
What a show.
About the father who transitions.
Yes. Yeah. Incredible. It's really worth watching. I'm only on the first episode, but the world is an interesting place, I'll tell you something. All right, we've got to get to offshore money, Mubs. It is time for us to find out what we can do to manage our money better, to get it offshore and to keep it safe and secure. Offshore Money is brought to you by St. James Global. They've been helping South African tax residents for over 20 years, in fact, over 25 years, with the structuring, management and administration of assets held offshore. Very specialized area of expertise. You can't just jump in here without knowing. In other words, Mubs, you could have R1 million to invest.
Mm-hmm.
And if you tried to do it all on your own, you would screw it up.
This is true.
You need to do it right. They have offices in Cape Town and Johannesburg. That's St. James Global. You can find out more by going to stjamesglobal.com. And we've got something special happening with them, which is a weekly thing, recently launched. We've called it Offshore Money. We've done this because we need to educate and change South African offshore investors so that they comply with international tax legislation and help you to be more aware of what you can do to protect yourself and your future heirs against all the changes that have been taking place in international law. So we've brought someone in this morning who's Rex Cowley. He's the co-founder of a company called Overseas Trust and Pension. They're based in Guernsey in the Channel Islands. And that's Overseas Trust and Pension, OTAP, O-T-A-P. They're fiduciary specialists with extensive experience in structuring offshore wealth for international investors and many countries abroad. And on the line, we have Rex. Rex, good morning. How are you?
Yes, I'm very good. Thanks, Cliff. And yourself?
Good. Excellent. Now, Rex, I need you to help me because we've got to take baby steps here. For many of us, the whole world of offshore investing is a very complex world. But I wanted to know, from your point of view, preserving offshore wealth and retirement for South African residents, tell us about the use of international retirement structures, the role of providing a holistic solution for South African resident clients when it comes to putting their money into these things.
Absolutely. I think the first point to make on this, Cliff, is if you look at the average South African, the average South African has only about 6% of their actual wealth exposed to international assets.
Mm-hmm.
And when you put that into context, your American peer, your European, your Brit, they'll typically have 35 to 45% exposed to non-domestic wealth. In other words, if I'm an Englishman, I'll invest 35 to 45% of my wealth in America, in Europe, in Japan, and generally most developed countries, people think globally about their wealth. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is, you know, we are a global village. We are all part of the same place. But currency and domestic issues do impact significantly on your wealth. So if you're in a country where your currency is incredibly strong, you're going to be wealthier than the country next door. And in South Africa, we've obviously seen an ongoing deterioration of the rand. You know, since the 80s, I started out my career in 1990, and then I could buy a pound for about R3.75. Obviously, we know the pound's trading at 21.50 odd at the moment. So a long-term significant depreciation in terms of the value of the rand, and in actual fact, wealth. And another interesting statistic that came out recently was South Africa has the quickest number of falling millionaires in any country in the world. So people in South Africa are becoming poorer simply because they are not investing internationally. And the reason for this has been exchange control. But that reason has gone. You know, you can put 10 million rand abroad now per year. So for most people, exchange control regulation actually has gone. So there's no excuse not to diversify your wealth. And let's face it, South Africa is an emerging market. If you look at emerging markets in terms of risk, they are high risk. They're not called nice markets or pretty markets. They're emerging because they are very volatile and they carry significant risk. Developed markets are far more stable. So I think that's some of the context. So the question is, you know, to come back to your question, what do I do when I put money offshore? Well, you have some choices, and you either hold it in your own name, which is fraught with issues, or you put it into a structure specifically to meet a requirement. And for a lot of people, the use of offshore wealth is specifically to build wealth, mm-hmm. which can be used to provide for retirement. And it's very, very similar to utilizing your domestic RA or domestic pension plan.
All right. Now, this is important on two fronts. I mean, you've very clearly and very eloquently put the case for why we should be putting some of our money overseas and we should have some exposure offshore. And you've also explained why it's important to have retirement planning and what those vehicles might need to be like. But let's look at why international, because a lot of people, are you all right?
Yes, I am.
Just heard something happen in the background. Rex, what was that? Is someone else okay? Did the cat die? I mean, is everything all right in the background there?
The cat didn't die, it just slipped. an inch to the left and it would have been dead.
That cat is drunk. Rex, international retirement plans are best considered for offshore asset protection, right? I mean,
correct.
You've got things that people are concerned about. For example, you could be the most smart investor in the world. You could create some kind of a trust or some kind of offshore retirement plan, and then something happens between when you die and your heirs inherit, and they end up getting nothing out of it. It has happened before because people Correct. Don't know the rules. So how should we plan for that? Access to hard currency, the true international non-rand investments. Tell us about that.
I think, Cliff, there's two sides to the investment story. The one is the sexy bit, which is investment returns. That's what we all focus on. Has my money gone up or down today? Mm-hmm. Investing is for the long term, so while today does matter, it's the long term that's important. However, the other side to that are the big factors that can erode wealth or have a massive impact on your wealth. You know, so for example, you're an entrepreneur, you're in business, in your life you sign a guarantee for something, something happens in your business, you get sued, you get challenged, your estate gets challenged, that can hit you personally. And you can lose a significant amount of wealth. By using retirement planning vehicles, you get full asset protection. So it doesn't matter what happens in your day-to-day life. Those assets are protected from creditors or any other claim that might come your way. So for entrepreneurs to utilize international retirement vehicles alongside their domestic plans, it's a very good way of protecting wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously with a retirement structure, they're tax efficient. You get the tax-free roll-up inside your investments, same as you get with your local schemes. So the capital gains and income that accrues within that plan is not taxed whilst it remains in the plan. So for a lot of South Africans, you know, we see the JSE going up year on year, not necessarily in hard currency terms, but there's a lot of gains. You look at a lot of domestic portfolios, people don't want to sell a specific stock because they're going to have to pay CGT. It's ridiculous. But you should be happy that you're paying CGT because it means you have made a gain. But you can take that whole argument away by utilizing retirement vehicles. So you can still have an actively managed portfolio within an international structure and benefit from the from the roll-up. So you've got your asset protection on your one hand, and you've got your tax-efficient environment, which reduces cost on your investment, which is critical. And then the other bit that's really important is, now, what do we want those assets to ultimately do? It's not really about the investment return. It's about enabling us financially to undertake certain things or to achieve certain things. That could be independence in retirement. It could be getting the kids financially independent. It could be ensuring that your spouse is looked after when you pass away, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So again, that sort of creating that environment for succession, allowing succession planning to happen without it going through your estate, without having to go through probate, without the need for a will, etc., is a very valuable tool, because it doesn't just save you money in terms of executive fees and the cost of probate. It saves you time. So your retirement plans, like with your life policies and your endowments that you're used to domestically, they pay out incredibly quickly. Typically within 7 days on receipt of a death certificate, the people that you are concerned about on your passing are looked after. Again, these are the other sides to the sort of the asset protection and preservation story.
There's a lot of talk at the moment, and Pravin Gordhan mentioned this in his budget, offshore trusts being taxed on income, capital gains and death. Now, would you consider retirement trusts as a more suitable alternative to the thousands of offshore discretionary trusts that are coming under attack by SARS?
I think it's absolutely is the short answer. And, you know, we're waiting for the Davis Tax Commission's estate duty paper to be finalized. You know, we've had the consultation and the outcome from that. And I think that the short of it is, whether you're in a domestic trust or you're in a foreign trust, the objective is that you don't set these structures up for tax purposes. You set them up for asset protection purposes or succession purposes, which aren't tax related. And I think that, you know, the government's getting there. And the reality is, we've had Section 25B and Section 7A in the Income Tax Act for a long time. So in reality, an offshore trust and a domestic trust are pretty much taxed on a very even footing. But the new anti-avoidance legislation, which will no doubt come into play, will ensure that some of some of the quirks around domestic trusts and offshore trusts, particularly where a loan has been used to make a distribution to a beneficiary, you know, that will become taxable. That will form part of the estate of the person that receives it. Again, just taking away some of the flexibility that the discretionary trusts had. Retirement planning, on the other hand, is the government's encourage us to plan for retirement. You know, in fact, if you look at Section 10 of our Income Tax Act, if you're a foreigner and you live in South Africa and you draw your pension from overseas, you're exempt from tax here. You know, that's why we have so many expats living here. I'd love to say it is the weather and the wine. Not just that, they can come here and they can live in a tax-free existence. You know, they're not absolutely tax-free. Yes, they contribute hugely to our economy. They employ people in the informal markets, and they're big spenders, which is fantastic for the economy. But there's an incentive for them. So governments around the world generally look at retirement planning as the wise thing to do. And you know that there's more of a focus on it these days, because in the good old days, you know, my father, he worked for a bank all his life. He had a defined pension benefit pension when he went on retirement. And it didn't matter what the markets did, his pension went up every year. You know, it was fantastic. Those days have gone. Everything's gone to defined contribution. In other words, instead of the company you're working for taking the market risk and taking the risk of funding those schemes, you take it on yourself. So people rarely, in today's world, are absolutely responsible for themselves in terms of retirement. And that goes, you know, for the majority of your sort of medium, sort of mid-wealth upwards. Yes, people that are in the lower income brackets will get support from the government. But if you look at social security systems, whether it's South Africa, the UK, the US, you're not going to be made wealthy by being on a government pension. Let's put it that way. So it really is about funding for retirement, and that is seen as a prudent thing to do. One word of caution.
Yes.
We saw this in the budget, in the retirement reforms, where people overfund for retirement, and the whole idea is that I'm going to put everything I have, including the kitchen sink, into a pension scheme, because pension schemes actually are tax efficient. that kind of sort of reckless behavior, if I'd call it, which is, you know, it's not in the spirit of the game, that kind of behavior will no doubt draw the attention of the revenue services, and we could probably see people having anti-avoidance legislation invoked against them. So whatever you do in life, do it sensibly. Make sure that, you know, the amount of funds you put into retirement plans is appropriate for your needs, and that's where your financial advisor comes in. Looking at long-term cash flow forecasts, looking at your lifestyle requirements, looking at life expectancy. You know, today we're living to 80, 85, 87 as a standard. Back in the 1960s, you typically worked around about 67, 68, and you die at 73. You only had to plan for 5 years of life.
Right.
You know, now you're retiring at 60, and you're living to 85, 87, 27, nearly 30 years of funding required. So the game's changed, and governments understand that they don't want to be forking out the funds. So retirement vehicles are seen as a good thing to use, but again, like everything in life, don't abuse them.
Yeah, this is fascinating stuff, and I mean, this kind of advice is exactly what I think a lot of people are looking for, because it's very hard to get this sort of advice, and also you're never sure whether the people you're talking to are the right people. In this case, Rex, thank you very, very much. It's a pleasure to have this advice, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Pleasure, Cliff.
And we'll probably talk to Rex again sometime in the future, but you can always get this specialist expertise available through St. James Global, an independent offshore advisory group. You can find out all about them. They have access to professionals like Rex Carley, both in South Africa and abroad. And for more info, you can get them on stjamesglobal.com. That's stjamesglobal.com. That's stjamesglobal.com, one word. Go and take a look at that. Thank you very much to Rex Carley, and thank you to St. James Global. There's a bit of useful information for you if you are looking to put some of your money overseas, and perhaps also if you have to start, and there's never, ever a stage where it's too early to start planning for retirement and for saving. Very, very good advice all around. It's 8 o'clock, cliffcentral.com. On the way, we've got a guest popping in. We've got some more news to get to. I'm going to tell you about a rogue planet that two crazy rabbis say is going to destroy the Earth later this year. You don't know about this?
No, but I think it's great that we've got crazy rabbis for a change instead of crazy pastors.
Pastors, it's crazy rabbis, it's crazy imams. Yeah. They're all fucked in the head.
We've got to get a nice mix of everyone. That's great.
Yeah. All right. Very, very good. So all of that and more coming up in the next one.
CliffCentral.com.